Welcome to number 12 in a series of audio explorations into the campaign by John Gilroy from the Irish Labour Party. He's trying to get elected to the Irish Parliament, and we are some way into a campaign that hasn't yet been officially started. And good morning, John. I want to ask you about what it feels like to be in a campaign.
Morning, Paul. We are in a campaign for a very long time. We discussed earlier in one of our interviews that this seems to be the longest campaign ever. You rightly said that the campaign hasn't started officially and won't start until the Dáil is dissolved. When the Dáil is dissolved, the panic sets in, Paul. The campaign is on. And the shortest time a campaign can take place, or an election campaign can be, is 18 days, and the longest is 28 days. But we know now that the date is crystallising around the 25th of February for the election.
Right. Well, now, look, whatever about the ideas that, people are going to be contesting and putting out there, the politicians who are running for election are human beings, and they are going to have feelings, up and down emotions about what's going on. Now, look, you know more about this than I do. What's it like from the point of view of feelings? Do you guys, and candidates, do you have ups and downs in your morale during political campaigns?
Well, we're into the field of political psychology now.
We are. Yeah, that's actually what I want to examine with you, really, today. I think it would be an interesting change in the subject matter. Yeah, political psychology. What about the emotional side of politics?
Well, look, I'm delighted to talk about this because I can see it from two sides. First of all, being a candidate in the eye of the storm. And second, I'm a psychiatric nurse for the last 27 years. And I have been a student of psychology for that length of time. So I might be able to give a fairly unique insight to bring both of those disciplines to bear on what political psychology is. And I suppose there's no literature on this, Paul, and the question you asked is, do politicians suffer from the ups and downs? Of course they do. We're not robots or automatons. We're human beings like everyone else. And I think, personally, I can see what we would call something like the Stockholm syndrome, you know, where hostages become very over familiar with their kidnappers and become great friends with them, and their thinking goes all askew, and there's no logic to what people think, and that can be certainly applied to politics.
You mean politicians can lose their cool or lose their sense of what they're about?
We've seen a great number of campaigns imploding, Paul, under pressure, and we've seen a great number of politicians of all levels and experience imploding in front of TV cameras or on radio, and we've some examples of that from the last couple of nights in our own party even. But look, I suppose, from my own point
of view... Can I press you to be more specific? What on earth did you mean by that euphemism? We've seen a little bit of stuff like that in our own party now. Can you analyse what you actually saw a bit?
I suppose now that you tell me, I suppose I'll have to. Look, we were watching Vincent Brown the other night, and our finance spokesperson was on. She rose to the host's provocation, really, and I suppose did not give as polished a performance as she might have liked herself. We see Conor Lennon as well, junior minister of the Fianna Fáil government, only the previous night, similarly imploding, and maybe even worse, threatening to sue the presenter because the questioning was getting too hard. So we see all these things. These are very experienced people. They're in government and they're in opposition for the last 13 years, and you would imagine that people of that calibre and experience would not lose their cool on television.
But they did. You wouldn't. You would never expect them to do that. So what causes it, John? What causes it?
It'd be very easy to say, Paul, that pressure causes this, but we must analyse what this pressure is. And I suppose every politician in the political campaign feels the pressure. And I suppose we suffer maybe from a syndrome maybe which we call candidate-itis. And I would identify the main symptoms of that as paranoia, Paul. Everyone's out to get you when you're in politics. We generally feel that, but during the campaign we feel it intensely. And just because we're paranoid doesn't mean it's not true. Second one, Paul, is that any little self-doubt that you felt in your entire life is magnified by 500 points during a campaign. And the third one then is a complete inability to see where you're going to even get a single vote. Like last week, I said, this campaign is going fantastic, it's really brilliant, things are going swimmingly, and today I say, my God, am I even going to get a single vote anywhere? Now, what has changed, Paul? Has the world outside my head changed? Not a bit. There's nothing in the world has changed, but my thinking has changed. So there is my self-doubt and my paranoia and my inability to see where I'm going to get a vote. That is part of the political pressure, the political milieu under which we're working. We're open and influenced by every sort of concern and other influence out there, which all feed into a general feeling of being perhaps overwhelmed.
Now, ordinary people feel overwhelmed. I mean, in their normal daily life, one day everything's going along fine, the next day something happens, and they're suddenly at sixes and sevens. You mean you politicians are not immune from this?
I think politicians are just like everyone else, Paul. Although very often we put up a front, a visage perhaps, where we are immune to all these things. Because it's strange in Irish politics. You don't see this in politics in any other country. That the idea of having a bit of political passion, Paul, seems alien to Irish culture. That if you feel strongly about something and you vocalise the strength of that feeling with passion, people in Ireland, or the political commentariat, say, God, this guy is losing it. I see American politicians, I see French politicians, I see British politicians speaking with absolute passion and determination and real feeling for the topic that they're talking about. And people say, sure, isn't that what it should be about? But in Ireland, it seems to be passionless, rational and logical to the point of paralysis by analysis, Paul.
Now, look, I'm remembering a particular interview. Pat Rabbit did an extraordinary tough job on one of the government people. I forget his name.
Pat
now.
Carey, isn't it?
Pat Carey,
yeah.
Now. Tell me, two things. How did Pat Rabbit feel while... now, we're just guessing now, but how did Pat Rabbit feel while he was putting that boot in? And how did Pat Carey feel while he was being booted about?
Look, Pat Rabbit is a man who lives and breathes his politics. Absolutely. Like, I mean, Pat is a man who believes in everything he does. I know Pat Rabbit very well. He feels this, Paul. There was no way that this could be put on or acted. We saw the clips. It's absolute genuine passion.
Yeah, it wasn't scripted. I could tell that.
Now, how did Pat Carey feel? How would you feel, Paul, if I decided to attack your career and tell you that you've been doing everything wrong, you've destroyed the country, you have a personal and as well as a political responsibility in this because you are a member of the government, you have not voted against the government in any single decision. Now, Pat Carey is a particularly unfortunate character because he has a sort of a look about him that would attract sympathy anyway. At the best of times, we often say that Pat looks like the parish priest. The old harmless parish priest, and it's awful to be attacking such a figure.
But that may gain him votes, of course. That may be a studied, deliberate political pose.
And there's no question about that. Pat Carey is a cute old devil. There's no question about that. He can't, I'm sure, help the way he looks, but he can maximise the benefit of it. But
look, so when a Labour Party politician, like Joan Burton, right, loses the rag with Vincent Brown, is that a studied political outburst, or is that a moment of weakness?
Well, I don't think it's either, Paul. I hope it's not a studied political outburst, because it wasn't very well studied. And second of all, I wouldn't say it's a moment of weakness. I'd just say it's a moment where she rose to the provocation of an old pro. Now, I suppose the difficulty with that is we all know that Vincent is an old pro, and that this is his line that he takes. And if he sees any chance to provoke someone, he will. And I can't understand how people, knowing this, still fall for it. And it is a trap that's been deliberately set by Vincent. We saw him sitting back, laughing and sneering. I felt he was a bit nasty at times because he kind of joined forces with Joe Higgins from the Socialist Party, who was sitting next to Joan. And really, I don't think that those two men would have treated another male politician in the same manner. They were dreadfully patronising towards Joan in the manner that men sometimes are towards women. But that's not to say that Joan...
Oh my God, you're reminding me of the football now and Andy Gray and you know, all that stuff. Yeah. Now look here. Look, hang on, let's just change track. Because I want to find out, how do you pick yourself up when you feel that, oh my God, nobody is going to vote for me at all, I don't deserve a vote, I should never have got into this, I should have followed the advice of my X, Y and Z and gone to work in the bank or something. or never stuck my head above the parapet. How do you pick yourself up from those emotions?
Well, Paul, there's no need to pick yourself up from it, because if you can identify the problem in advance of it happening and recognize it when it does happen, you can just carry on. And like I told you, I've been a psychiatric nurse for 27 years. I've been dealing with people who have experienced all sorts of emotions, and I'm very, very highly psychologically aware myself. So being able to identify the difficulties and address them as they happen means you don't have to pick yourself up. These things are happening inside the head of the candidate. These are not happening in the objective world. You said there a moment ago, I don't think anyone's going to vote for me. I don't think that at all. I feel that. But I know people are going to vote for me, because I've worked hard up for the last 7 years. At a local level, I've contributed well at national level as well. I was chairman of the Labour Party Councillor Association. I've written a policy document which has been accepted by the National Labour Party. So look, there's all these things are building in. These are the things that are going to get you votes. Whatever I think in my own mind, that I'm not going to get any votes, I don't think that, but I often feel it.
And you're going to have another day, and maybe another one or two days during this entire campaign, where you feel your whole world is going to fall apart. Is that right?
Yeah, look, I think in any campaign or in any project that you're doing, Paul, you make a plan, you make it flexible, that you can react to circumstances as they change, but you must make it robust. And if your plan is robust enough, Paul, it will carry you through if it's well thought out and it's strong enough. If it is not robust in the first instance, Paul, nothing is going to get you elected, or nothing is going to bring you success in the project you're doing. It's a good idea to build in three unknown factors that are going not to be, they're going to be not to your advantage. We don't know what those factors are going to be. If we can control them, we need to control them. Very often, we'll have no control over them.
So you subscribe to the chaos theory that says that out of the blue, suddenly the butterfly is going to flap its wings and you're going to have a sudden bout of trouble.
I don't know about that, but there's plenty of chaos out there, and I suppose politics is more chaotic than anything. But look, make your plan, make it robust, make it flexible, and drive on, Paul. Do not change your plan according to your own feelings. If there's evidence empirical out there that your plan is wrong, change it, but change it quickly, and do not hesitate on it. If your plan is robust enough, it'll work. If it's not robust in the first place, love nor money, our votes won't get you elected.
Okay, well, look, we've given psychology a good old run now, because I think if politics is only ideas, it isn't quite as interesting as if it has ideas and psychology involved. But give us a bit of news now. Look, we have to have a last-minute news item from your campaign. What are you doing today, for example?
Today, Paul, is our plan. Our plan is in the mornings, every morning, since before Christmas and right up to the election, we'll be delivering literature into targeted areas of the city. That literature is changing as the campaign evolves. There's a pattern to the literature. The first set, we'll say last summer even, we were dropping literature into areas where I would not be well known, and the literature was introducing John Gilroy.
Okay, so where are you going today? Which geographical area are you heading to this morning?
We'll be in North Central Ward this morning for 3 hours. We're going out the door now. It's almost 10 o'clock, and the team are I can see them gathering outside the window. We'll be going there for 10 o'clock this morning. We'll spend until 1 o'clock there. We'll take a break for a few hours for something to eat, a shower, we'll freshen up. And we're canvassing then in the Mayfield area for 2 hours in the afternoon. Come home again, there's some correspondence and administrative work needs to be done. Bite to eat again, and we're out again from about 6:15 until maybe 8:30 or 9:15 in the Mayfield area again. Then, because I'm a sitting councillor, there are some community meetings I must go to and some community groups I must meet as part of my general work as a councillor. And I try to schedule them for after 9 o'clock. So it'll be close to midnight before I get home tonight, Paul. And that's the way it'll be until the election. And that's the way it's been since Christmas.
And you'll be tired and run down, and you'll need a good sleep.
And cranky, I suppose, as well. And my wife will find me intolerable to live with. God bless her.
John Gilroy, you're a power of energy and a good deal of psychological insight. Thank you ever so much for this morning's conversation.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks very much.